You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Moule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 132 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wawrishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show, which is, of course, a member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Our show is brought to you by Metal Rocks Custom Artisan Jewelry and SeatGiant.ca. You can find links to both of them on the episode page at BCLionsDen.ca, and we thank them for their support. The BC Lions opened up the 2019 preseason in Edmonton last week, and the result was predictable with the visitors bringing a veteran-light lineup to Commonwealth Stadium. 22-7 loss to the Eskimos had a few moments of positive play from the Leos, but also brought concerns. We'll talk about both the good and the bad of that game with someone who was actually in the stadium. Mojo Kemp is off this week to hang out with his hero Godzilla, so I've arranged for the host of one of my favorite Canadian Football Podcast Network shows to join me this week, and that's none other than Travis Carraw of the Two and Out CFL podcast. With Travis in the co-host chair, we'll bounce around some of the camps in the CFL and see what's going on across the league. So let's get to it and bring him in now. Travis, thanks for sitting in for Mojo tonight, and welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I'm sure I blew it when I laughed during the date with Godzilla a bit, but
Mojo's pretty.
I'm happy to be back on the podcast.
Mojo's pretty serious about his Godzilla. Like, he was not going to miss the premiere night of Godzilla, I can tell you that. But
that's funny. The new movies are actually pretty good, so I don't really blame him.
Oh, yeah. Well, he goes way back to the claymation ones where it was like,
wow,
Godzilla just smashed and everything. So he's huge fan. He's even talking about getting a tattoo. So,
wow.
Yeah, I'm sure he's right about now. He's got his popcorn and he's excited like a little schoolgirl right now, I'm sure. How's the offseason been treating you, man?
Well, pretty good. My sister ended up having a baby in October, and I know that was during the season. So she lives really close to me. A lot of visiting my little nephew, and in living in Red Deer, this was the coldest winter since I moved here in 2014. So it was just trying to stay warm, man. In February, I don't think we got above minus 20 once, and I know that's not a problem on the West Coast, though.
I don't see that very often unless I'm at Grey Cup, and even that's been pretty warm lately. You got Raptors fever, man, like everybody else seems to have.
You know, I support them. It's pretty hard not to pay attention to what's going on. I remember the mid-90s when Jordan and the Bulls were doing their thing.
Yeah.
And that one really captured my imagination more than the Raptors are. But I mean, Kawhi Leonard is a monster. I know what's going on, and you know what? I kind of do hope they win, but I'm not living and dying on every shot like a lot of people are.
Yeah, I'm more annoyed with seeing Drake on my TV 4,000 times a game. But anyway, we'll stop this basketball talk. So we're pretty close to the start of the regular season now. Let's get started by talking a bit about your show and what you and Brazilian Ty have planned for the 2-0 podcast this year.
You know what? Last year, we ended by doing the live show at the Grey Cup, and I had a pierogi eating competition against Zach Evans, D lineman for the Riders. I don't know how we can possibly top that this year, but he does want a rematch. He kind of wants a different eating competition. We'll officially announce those details sometime in the near future, but we just started a website /blog, toandout.ca, so we're going to be providing a little bit more content through that. As well, just started that in the last week. So I'm just really excited to have football back. A lot of the offseason was worrying about what's going to happen and if the start of the season was going to be delayed. So I'm just really happy we're getting underway here.
Yeah, no doubt. That live show at Grey Cup was awesome, by the way. That was a great idea by you, and a lot of money was raised for CFL Fans Fight Cancer, which is an organization that I'm involved with quite heavily. So thanks for that. And that was awesome. How did you feel the next day after eating all those pierogies?
I did not feel the best, if I'm being honest. It, like, it all, because there was 18 of them and they weren't small, and I ate them in less than 2 minutes, so they all traveled through me in the same big doughy bowling ball. It was pretty rough actually until about Saturday night when I recovered. It was fun though.
Yeah, I bet. We've seen a lot of change on a number of fronts this season, from free agency and players changing address to the introduction of CFL 2.0 and a new CBA. What are some of your thoughts on what's taken place since the Stampeders hoisted the Grey Cup in Edmonton last November?
You know, that almost feels like, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Already. I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of what I was in November. And I think a lot of us were thinking that we are not going to see any of the big free agents like Bo Mitchell and Mike Riley sign until a new CBA was done. And that was just done, you know, May long weekend.
Yeah.
And could you imagine if we waited until that long and Bo Mitchell and Mike Riley were not signed with any team? I think the offseason would have been a lot more crazier. So free agency, it surprised a lot of people, and it surprised me with how fast guys were signing and how fast teams were spending money. We're on a BC Lions podcast, and they did not take long to start paying big money to guys like Mike Riley, and he's totally worth the money. I don't know if they thought that the salary cap would move a little bit more, even if it doesn't. To have a guy like Mike Riley on your team is a total game changer, but I kind of thought that the news was going to be all CBA for the entire offseason. And it really wasn't that until, you know, the first week of May, when they finally sat down in the rooms for basically 3 days straight and banged the deal out. But the offseason was a fun one. And I kind of did think it was going to be a dead one, especially with no CFL week like we've had over the past two seasons. But it ended up flying by, and a lot went on. It was pretty tough to digest everything. But yeah, like I said, it wasn't really what I expected, but I'm glad that we're here talking about a new season anyway.
Yeah, the CBA discussions, like you said, it was pretty quiet. I mean, we didn't really hear anything from the league throughout the whole negotiations. You know, the CFLPA was pretty active on Twitter, and we're holding regular press conferences, yeah, and things like that. And you kind of got one side of the story, and for a while there, it looked like it was going to get ugly, but all of a sudden things got resolved, and even like a last minute little hitch was averted as well. So, you know, I don't know why the CFL was so quiet when they were taking so much abuse on social media and stuff like that.
Yeah, they, and I kind of like that they weren't, you know, having the battle in the media, but it's, yeah, almost like they said nothing.
Yeah.
And Ambrosi was off doing things in Finland and Mexico or whatever. Yeah. And he did an expert job. I remember at the draft, Farhan tried to grill him on what was going on with the CBA, and he had none of it. They said nothing to the very end. And I kind of prefer it that way, but at the same time, you kind of want a little bit of that drama out there, so we kind of know at least what they're negotiating over.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to see as well. Some players were pretty vocal on Twitter, yeah, and things like that. And even the vote was only 74%. So, you know, there's some guys that are still pretty unhappy with the deal. But thankfully we're going to have football. So that's all we really care about at this point, I think.
Yeah.
Well, this is a Lions podcast, so I guess we should start talking some Lions. And you were at Commonwealth Stadium for that masterpiece of a preseason game last week. I see you stopped by the tailgate of the Eskimo Empire crew. Looked like a great day for a football game there.
You know, I just hope it's not the nicest day of the season. It was a gorgeous day last year in Edmonton. I've got season tickets there, and it was iffy throughout the entire season. It almost seemed like every game had a threat of rain or a threat of storms or almost delayed by wildfire smoke, which we're kind of dealing with now.
Yeah.
But on Sunday, it was a beautiful sunny day. You couldn't ask for a better better weather for a football game.
We weren't able to see the game, of course, and as you have pointed out to me, we were lucky we couldn't. What can you tell us about what you saw from a Lions team that didn't bring a whole lot of starters, only two, in fact, to Edmonton?
You know, I was focusing a lot on the offensive lines with both teams, and we're kind of at the point of the season where the defenses are ahead, and the offensive line struggled on both sides. And I think the story of this game, though, it's everything to do with the special teams. BC, they got off to a quick start with the Shakir Ryan punt return for a touchdown, and then the script kind of flipped, and it was BC's special teams struggling from containing the Eskimo returners. They gave up, I think it was over 200 yards and or close to 200 yards in punt returns. And I know it's the first preseason game of the year, and a lot of the rookies were in there, but you can't be doing that.
Yeah, hard to tell whether that's scheme or just guys coming out of 6 days of training camp, not really knowing what they're doing yet, but yeah, that's a concern for sure. Of course, a new offensive or a new special teams coach with the Lions as well. The Lions re-signed quarterback Ricky Lloyd, and I was looking forward to seeing how he was going to perform in this game. He opened by throwing an interception on his first play from scrimmage, so certainly not the growth you wanted to see from him. Given none of the starters were playing, what did you see from the guys jockeying for the backup spot behind Mike Riley?
It was a kind of mention the offensive lines were kind of struggling to contain the defensive fronts for the other teams. So I found that they really didn't have much time to really set and get anything done. I'd say Ricky Lloyd probably had the strongest arm of the group, and Austin Apodaca was probably the most mobile of the group. He was on the run for a lot of the game, but it was a tough game for any of the BC quarterbacks that ended up getting in there, to be honest.
Yeah, it's hard to judge these games. I really find exhibition games tough.
It is.
And, you know, even going to training camp, I get a kick out of these reports that come back and say, oh, so-and-so just made a wicked 70-yard catch or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, there's nobody hitting anybody. You know, you should be making those catches. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to tell until the bullets are real, right? But we weren't able to see the game, so we're going through your eyes here. Jamel Lyles, the running back from University of Manitoba, led all the rushers in the game. Lyles was quoted at the combine saying he wanted to become the next Andrew Harris. By all accounts, he looked pretty impressive in his 6 carries for 54 yards. What did you notice about his game?
I think the biggest thing with him was his effort. Yeah. And when you're a rookie Canadian coming into the CFL, it's a good bet that on your first year, you're going to have to probably play special teams. I couldn't pay attention to everything. And I don't think he had a catch until the third quarter. And I think it was the last play of the game when he had a carry, and he was still going all out trying to make things happen. So the Lions have to be encouraged by that. And they've had good luck with running backs from the province of Manitoba. At least Jamel Lyles went to the University of Manitoba. Andrew Harris ended up going back there a few years ago, but they've done okay with running backs from that province. And I think it was after the game, they ended up having a post-game interview with him, and he said, I want to be the next Jamel Lyles. And when you hear something like that from a running back or any player, really, you got to love that confidence. And I think the Lions have to love the work ethic that he showed.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here that don't think he's going to make the team. He's still got another year of university eligibility left.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happens in that case, if he remains Lions property or not, but I would hope so. Yeah, he, you know, by all accounts from the radio guys, he was the most impressive Lion on the day. So that's good to see a good Canadian kid coming in and performing well in his first game. Defense seemed to play pretty well from what we were listening to, even stopping the starters at a goal line stand following the Lloyd interception. They had 5 sacks on the day, as did the Eskimos, which reflects on the offensive line you were talking about.
Yeah.
Did anyone stand out to you on the defensive side of the ball for the Lions?
And you know what? That's what was kind of impressive about the Lions. They were playing mostly their backups in the game, but the Eskimos, it was their home preseason game. They were trying to figure out their starting offensive line group. And at halftime, I was wondering, I mean, is that the Eskimos starting offensive line? And the Lions kind of had their way with them. Trevor Harris, when he was in the game, he was under pressure almost every single play. And I think that's what the Lions want to see. There's a battle on the opposite defensive end of Odell Willis. So yeah. Darius Allen was in the backfield, and there was the Canadian kid, Edward Godin, with the 2 sacks. And a guy that I really noticed was Ebenezer Ogundeko. Is that how you say his name?
Something like that. Close enough.
Yeah. He had a sack, and he made a special teams tackle as well. So I think the Lions do have some defensive line depth there, and they're having a nice little battle to close out the season. I know a few players I was watching, and to be honest, the Lions, they were wearing their home jerseys. The numbers were pretty tough to see from the upper deck. And there was a kid on the team from my hometown of Lloydminster. His name's Kyler Cherry, and he was a top 20 prospect a couple years ago. He went to Acadia, and he's 6'7". He's got a big, you know, 8-inch long beard like I do. And he ended up, I think, tearing his bicep that year, and he finished the season, and he had a knee injury, and he kind of fell off the draft board a little bit. So he got into the game in the fourth quarter. A guy from Lloydminster like me, we don't get to see our kids get into the very many CFL games. So he got in there, and they looked like both offensive lines, they struggled with pass protection. They were a little bit better with run protection, which I think – offensive linemen, they would rather do the hitting than being the ones getting hit. So yeah. I think that's a kid to watch. He was a top prospect a couple years ago. I think he's in tough to make the team, but I'm from that Lloydminster side of the country. So I'm rooting for Kyler Cherry to at least make the practice roster in BC.
Talked about the special teams and the coverage on kick returns. Lions struggled big time in that area of the game, as you said. And as I said, it's hard to tell if that scheme coming from new special teams coach Taylor Attilio or if it's the result of an inexperienced lineup in 6 days of training camp. On the return side of things, Shakir Ryan had the nice 63-yard return and may have earned himself a second look as the Lions look for a replacement for Chris Rainey.
Yeah, he made it happen fast. It was in the first quarter, and he made the play, and that probably earns him the job, I would think. Chris Rainey has been a dynamite player in BC, so he'll be tough to replace, I think. Although, you know, last year he kind of fell out of favor. It kind of looked interesting from my point of view. I don't know why he fell out of favor, but he did. And this Shakir Ryan, I think he'll be able to step in and, you know, give the Lions a dynamic return game this season.
Let's hear from Coach Claybrooks now in his post-game comments. He loved the effort, but says the execution needs work.
Guys fought hard and played hard. We just got to play a little smarter, and we got to execute better. I mean, those are things that you have to do in order to compete with a team. This is a good football team that we played. Doesn't really matter who was on the field, as long as they were BC Lions, we should play at a high level and be held accountable. So, I mean, our guys are doing it. They're heading in the right direction, but we understand that, you know, 7 days into camp, and the good guys put on a great show, and they had great effort. And, you know, the thing of it is what I didn't want to have to coach was the effort. So we got them flying around, and then we just got to put them flying in the right spot. So that's one of those things. It's a process, and this is another step, another brick that we've laid in the foundation that we call training camp to get us in the season. It's just another step.
It'll be good. I mean, they got their first little taste of game action. It, you know, Preseason games are always faster than preseason practice, but regular season is always way faster than preseason. So, you know, they got a little bit of a taste of it, but they got to understand that, you know, it still ratchets up way more than that. But them coming back, you know, it's probably the first time that they've taken hits in months, and so they're feeling a little sore and understanding that they got to push through that to be here during training camp. So it's a good little test for them. But again, they got to see game speed, so when they come back here, things should be a little bit slower for them now, and they should be able to process things mentally, which, you know, helps you play physically faster. But we'll see. We'll see today. They've done a good job. I mean, physically, they can all play. There's no doubt. And saw a little bit of that on Sunday's game. Guys going up and making some nice high point catches and things like that. You can see on the tape that they're athletic, you know, and they have all the tools necessary to be a wide receiver in this league. But again, as it is always the challenge with young guys, it's the mental aspect of it, because as soon as you're not sure where you're supposed to line up and you start thinking about it, it slows you down, you know, physically. And so for those guys to be able to play fast and show what they're capable of, they have to have a great understanding of our playbook. And they're getting better each day, but I think they've understood this is a very complex offense. So, you know, they got to continue to improve, but that's what training camp is for.
Those audio clips were courtesy of bclions.com. That game was basically an audition for these guys. We'll see how many of them pass that audition as camp rolls on. Most of them won't see much time, if any, in the second preseason game. It may not even make it that long, but as Riley says, it was a necessary learning experience for all these guys.
Yeah, I mean, training camp and playing against your own guys is one thing, but once you get you know, in live game action, it is a whole nother animal. So some guys probably learned the hard way how tough the CFL really is.
Yeah, and I thought he made a great point about the mental aspect of the receivers, where they're not thinking, they're just doing, right? And at this point, right, I think with 6 days of camp, I think there's a lot of thinking going on still to make sure they're in the right spots, running the right routes and cuts and things like that. So hopefully they'll get better through this next week of camp, and the ones that did a half decent job might get some time this week, but we'll see how that goes. It's back to work in Kamloops, where it's been 30 plus degrees all week. The Lions feel that's an advantage for them in the heat and the higher altitude. I'm not sure they got the answers they were looking for some of these spots up for grabs, but we'll have to take it for what it was, an exhibition game with an inexperienced lineup after 6 days of camp.
I mean, you kind of want to be excited for it because it's football, but at the end of the day, yeah, you're right. It's 6 days of training camp. They haven't really had a chance to do anything. So now this week, and it's kind of the way the schedule works too. The preseason is kind of wonky with nine teams and everyone, you know, trying to get their two games in. So one of the games has to happen pretty soon. It just so happened that it was BC this time around in Edmonton that had to play the game in 6 days. But I think we'll learn a lot more from the home preseason game.
Since our last show, the Lions signed kicker punter Sergio Castillo. Castillo has spent parts of three seasons in the CFL with Winnipeg, Ottawa, and Hamilton, appearing in 20 regular season games. He was 39-47, 83% on field goals, 25-27 on converts, and averaged 45 yards per punt attempt. I think a pretty clear indication of what Ed Hervey has seen from the guys that he brought to camp, and they didn't perform that well in Edmonton either. So we knew this wouldn't be an area to watch in camp, and we'll see if Castillo could come in and be steady enough to ease everyone's concerns there. It was never going to be easy to replace a guy like Ty Long, and even he had an adjustment period in the CFL.
Well, Ty Long was the team's MOP last year.
Yeah.
So it's pretty tough to just come in and replace a guy like that right away, right?
Yeah. And I don't know what that says about your team when your kicker is the MOP, but hopefully there'll be more candidates this year.
I don't know the last time I've ever seen that.
I want to touch on a few more Lions items, and then since we have you here, we'll get into some league topics. I know most people have noticed, but in the past, Lions have been criticized for their lack of marketing. But this offseason and to start the season, they've really wrapped up their marketing efforts. Their social media and digital channels have been off the charts creative, and we're seeing buses driving around the city decked out in nothing rhymes with orange, logos all pasted all over them. They deserve some huge props for stepping up their game to get the Lions brand out into the public. People like Matt Baker, Alex Ruiz, and Rich Coe should really be proud of what they've been producing this offseason, I think.
And you know what? That's so simple. Nothing rhymes with orange. And I think we've all learned that since we were in grade two. And then you're like, wait, this is actually genius. And the videos that they produce on their Twitter account are some of the best in the CFL.
Mike Riley, I mean, the one that on Mike, the operating table.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And as soon as I saw that, I sent you a message. I'm like, I need a Mike Riley bobblehead. I was totally sold. I thought that video was incredible.
But getting Ed Hervey involved, too. Like, I never saw that coming. And he was, you know, he did a good job in it, too. I thought he was a pretty good actor.
Well, yeah. I'm like, is he going to have a line? And he actually did.
That's the perfect play. I didn't think Ed would be into doing stuff like that, but that just shows you maybe he's changed his spots a little bit too. Good on him for getting involved. On the other side of things, the Lions are taking some heat for the launch of the new era jerseys, which fans noticed right away did not match the player jerseys. They also pre-sold a bunch of Mike Riley jerseys, so some fans are a little ticked right now. Now, from what I've been told, there was an issue in the timing of the producing of the fan jerseys as there was no time to change the template before they had to go into production. This wasn't a Lions issue, it was a new era issue. Ottawa had similar issues with their new jerseys and they've all been pulled from the team store. I love the new uniforms, but this should have been handled better, Travis. I mean, you know, they probably should have delayed production until it was sorted out and just told fans about it and said, you know, we'll have jerseys mid-season or something like that. Definitely should not have pre-sold jerseys that fans hadn't seen yet if they knew they wouldn't match the players' jerseys. Now, there could be information that we don't have, and it's likely the case, but again, fans want to wear what the players wear. A new era, the league and the Lions should know this. I think there's a possibility it will get sorted this season, but I'll definitely be waiting until it is sorted before purchasing a new one myself.
Yeah, and you know what? Ottawa fans have kind of had the same complaint on social media that I've seen. And New Era is new to the jersey game. They've been providing the CFL with, you know, hats for I think it's been years. Mm-hmm. But the announcement came on that they were going to be the new jersey provider. Ooh, was it last summer, August, September, somewhere in there?
Pretty much mid-season, I think we heard that Adidas was bowing out. So
I think there was time to get something figured out. But again, they are totally new to the game. I love the videos that they have produced, on social media and stuff like that. But the launch otherwise was kind of underwhelming. Montreal did it right. Yeah, Montreal, I thought, did it right. They had a thing for season ticket holders and, you know, say what you want about the uniforms, but I thought the event they had for fans was awesome. But the overall launch of it, it just, like, a couple teams trickled them out. It just didn't seem very well coordinated to me.
Yeah, and I know there was no players involved in the modeling of the jerseys either because of the CBA discussion. So that might have had something to do with it too. You know, probably, not having the players be involved and model the jerseys. So, I thought it was a little underwhelming as well. That's a good point. But, it is what it is. And hopefully the jerseys get fixed because, like I said, I don't think I'll be buying one until they are. So,
well, that's a lot of coin to be dropping on a new jersey. Yeah. You know, it's a couple hundred bucks. Yeah. It's not, you know, $50 or something.
And I got burned a few years ago with a Reebok jersey that came out and the first batch came in the wrong color orange. It was like this pinky orange.
Wow.
And, I didn't really even realize it until I saw like the players' jerseys. And I was like, this jersey doesn't even match. Like it looks almost pink. And,
wow.
So yeah, the Lions got a new batch in and I already customized it. So I was out of luck. So, I'm definitely not going to jump the gun this time and buy one that's going to be out of date halfway through the season. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but, fans want to wear what the players wear, so hopefully they'll get this fixed pretty quick. CFL 2.0, I don't think I've had a chance to talk to you about that. I want to get your take on this new initiative by Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. Are you a fan of the idea?
Well, I think a lot of people are kind of confused about it when they first heard it, but Randy's road trip, you recorded the whole thing, and I listened to it and it almost seemed like Randy's road trip this year when the commissioner goes to the season ticket holders was just to sell 2.0. And I thought that he did a good job, honestly. You kind of wonder, man, they have this international combine. The word was that some of these players, like, they're not going to be able to hang in a CFL camp. But I've also heard others say that these leagues, they're not sending their best players to come play in Canada. They're kind of sending their on the fringe guys, okay, and allowing them to come play in Canada. So, I mean, if these guys come and the relationship's good and they had a Spanish Grey Cup, if they get a TV deal in Mexico, it really will work out for the players. I am kind of skeptical of how much money they can really get by, you know, having TV deals all across the world. But the league has been trying to grow by doing the same things every year. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that the commissioner is thinking outside the box and trying to get more of a global profile to the CFL. I really like that. It's really ambitious. But I've actually heard a few of the global players, you know, making some plays at training camp. There is a receiver named Max Zimmerman, and it's Saskatchewan Rough Riders camp. He was basically the star of their team day, their green and white day. He scored a touchdown. I don't know how I feel about the players only being able to make a minimum salary. I mean, we'll see how that changes next year. And it kind of seems like teams are forced to have a global player on their team. I mean, there's one spot, yeah, but the fact that a team is forced to pay a guy, that's what it seems like. Maybe there's more in there, but it seems like they're forced to have a guy on their roster. I don't know how I feel about that whole thing, but I'm definitely warming up to it anyway.
Yeah, and one of the points that Randy Ambrosi made, which I had not thought of going into this, was it's also going to be a two-way street. I mean, there's a lot of Canadian college players that don't get drafted, and when they play their final college game, they basically have nowhere to play. So, you know, if a Canadian can go to Mexico and start playing and develop a little more and maybe get noticed, I assume that the CFL is going to be scouting this league if they're going to be drafting players from it each year. So, you know, a Canadian player could get noticed there as well and find his way back into the Canadian Football League. So it's good, you know, even if they just want to keep playing for the passion of the game, you know, and they never make it to the CFL, it gives these guys a chance to go and play and maybe develop their skills a little more.
Yeah, I really like that too. So a lot of players, it's kind of a shock when you go straight from U Sports to the CFL. You're playing with, you know, young or older boys, your young men, to full-grown men. The speed, the power is way different. Maybe the level of an LFA in Mexico is, I don't know, halfway between U Sports and CFL, or I don't know exactly where it is. It probably isn't CFL level, but these CFL teams, they only have a practice roster of 10 guys. It's pretty tough to make that right out of college. Maybe guys can go to Mexico for 3 or 4 years and develop even further, and then, yeah, come back home and maybe have a shot in the CFL one more time. But this is a thing in hockey. There's a lot of Canadian players playing over in Germany or Britain or whatever. Yeah. They're able to make a comfortable living playing the sport that they love. And why can't we have that in football?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a few years to reach that point, but it's definitely something that could happen in the future. We don't have a lot of Lions news to talk about, so let's take advantage of having a CFL-themed podcast host with us and throw around some CFL topics. You're a Riders fan, of course. If Mojo was here, he'd call them the Stinkin' Riders, but with love, of course. What do you think happens with this team this year? Right now, for me, I have them in last in the West Division. Great defense, but I just don't have confidence that Caleros can stay healthy. They've lost some receivers. And the West is going to be vicious again this year. So,
you know what? I had them last in the West last year. and then, of course, the defense did what they did. And I know they miss Willie Jefferson going off to Winnipeg. But I feel like Micah Johnson is just as valuable, if not more valuable, on a defensive line. So I really can't see the defense forcing that many turnovers again. 2 years in a row. But how often have we been saying that about Winnipeg? Mm-hmm. It feels like for 5 years they've been able to force turnovers. But they do have a new weapon in John Ryan punting for the team, and he'll be able to get them out of some long fields. He'll be able to flip the field position. I hear he's booming like 65-yard punts. Mm-hmm. But I got to put them last in the West as well. They brought in some veteran stars. BC fans will know them well. Manny Arsenault and Solomon Elamimian. I like seeing them in Ryder Green, but it's the whole quarterback and the receiver situation there. They don't have the horses to put up, you know, 28 to 30 points a game. That being said, if the defense can repeat what they did last year, or at least 75% of what they did last year, maybe they can fight to a 9-9 season. They had 12 wins last year. I don't think they can do that again. But the defense will keep them in games. For sure. It probably will steal 4 or 5 games for them. But I see last in the West for them as well, again.
Yeah.
I saw it last year, but I see it for them happening this year, yeah.
Yeah, Claros is the big sticking point for me. And, I know most teams in the West would be in the same position if their starters went down. But when you look at the QBs in the West right now, I don't think anybody can deny the Riders have the 5th best option. That said, if he stays healthy and has a great year, you know, that team could easily win the division as well. I mean, the West is so, so tight this year.
There's a wide range of outcomes with every team that can, you know, have a home playoff game or miss the playoffs altogether. Caleros looked like, you know, a top quarterback just a few years ago before the injuries hit him in Hamilton. He seems to be coming into this year healthy, and we know he's the starting guy. Mm-hmm. Last year, Chris Jones played the game where he wouldn't name a starting quarterback. Yeah. And I think there was a lot of controversy there, but now I think he knows he's the guy, and that should be able to help him.
You saw the Edmonton Eskimos last week and some of their starters. What's your assessment of them and the moves they made this year? I mean, I was really impressed with what they did in a free agency, especially on defense after losing Riley and signing Trevor Harris. I thought Brock Sunderland did a fantastic job of kind of rebuilding that team.
Yeah, I think they made a smart move by letting Mike Riley talk to BC before free agency rolled around. So they kind of knew that they were going to lose him. So they were able to, you know, set up a budget going into free agency opening. And I think Brock did as well as one could have possibly hoped. And the linebacking core there now with Don Unamba and Jovan Santos Knox and Larry Dean is probably the strongest linebacking core in the CFL. And they lost some big game receivers with Brian Mitchell and Duke Williams and Darrell Walker, but they bring in Davaris Daniels and they bring in Greg Ellingson. So they lost a lot, but I call it almost a wash, because at times last year, the Eskimo defense was losing them games. They couldn't make the stops that they needed to, but they were also working with really long fields last year. Special teams could not get it done in Edmonton. I don't feel like they're that much better, or they're not that much worse, which is kind of crazy to say because they lost, you know, probably the most coveted free agent in the offseason.
Yeah, and I think Harris is, again, like Saskatchewan, he's the key to me. This is the first time he's going to be playing in the West Division, for one thing, which has been traditionally and looks like it will be again this year a lot tougher. So we'll see how he fares in the tougher division. But you know, I think they're kind of in the same boat as Saskatchewan. Great defense, and we're gonna have to see what comes about with their offense. But like you said, even losing those three receivers, they replaced them with a couple pretty good guys, so it's gonna be interesting. Now every season comes, and I say the same thing. This is a year the Calgary Stampeders will fall from grace, and every year by Labor Day, I'm hanging my head in shame. So, Travis, is this the year the Stampeders fall from grace, or do Huff and Dickinson simply go out and reload again?
I'm just as much as you rooting for the Stampeder dynasty to fall, but I don't know if this is the year. They always seem to have somebody else in the wings ready to go. And it's just a credit to that franchise. They did lose their starting right guard last week, but they've got some young guys that they drafted last year, and it looks like they're going to step right into that. They've had a great offensive line culture for years.
In
yeah, so as soon as they lose a guy, another one comes in. It's like the team hasn't really missed a beat. Look at all the receiver injuries they had last year.
Yeah.
By the end of the year, there are guys that have been on the practice roster, and Bo Mitchell plays with them like he's been playing with them for a year and a half. It's crazy what they're able to do. I still see the Stampeders having a home playoff game this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible how they get injuries and guys just come off the practice roster and they look like they've been playing all season. You know, that's a huge credit to Dave Dickinson and that coaching staff and for John Huffnagel to go out and find these guys. I mean, I've got them finishing behind the Lions in third just because I wanted to piss off Ryan. But I don't know, man. It's hard not to see this team doing what they've always done and just restocking and reloading. But hopefully that's not the case this year, because I'd like to see somebody else in the Grey Cup from the West for sure. To me, coming out of the gate, I'm looking at the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as the favorites to win the West. They're the team that had the most continuity in the offseason. They've added Willie Jefferson to an already good defense, even though they did lose Jovan Santos Knox and Taylor Loeffler. What are your thoughts on the Bombers?
I really like the Bombers, and like you said, the continuity. And they're a team that has their window, I think, kind of closing on them.
Yeah.
Mike O'Shea is going into this season as you can call him a free agent. I think the Bombers are probably at a point where they have to choose between him and Paul Lapolis, because I think Lapolis is probably ready to try and have a head coaching job again. He probably shouldn't have lost the one in Winnipeg the way he did the last time anyway. But the Bombers lost a few offensive linemen, but they had Jeff Gray come back up from the NFL. He looks like he's ready to step in. They made a big signing with Chris Matthews returning to the team. So they've got a big receiver opposite of Darvin Adams. Mm-hmm. But the biggest question probably is the secondary right now. Taylor Loeffler is gone. Chris Randall is gone. Kevin Fogg is gone. There's some playmakers right there in Winnipeg. So you probably have to watch for the secondary there. But they are the team, I think, best positioned to go deep into the playoffs. And last year, I thought if it gets cold in November, which it quite often does in the playoffs, that Winnipeg would be able to run over everybody into the Grey Cup. And I thought that the weather was on Calgary's side in the Western Final. Otherwise, you know, Winnipeg probably would have won a game that was minus 20 and blizzarding just the way they are set up. But it wasn't to be. I really hope that 1990 streak comes to an end. I know that sounds crazy coming from a Rough Rider fan, but those Bomber fans, they deserve it. That's they a long really time. Deserve a win.
Long time it in is. 19 league. Man, it's pretty it's pretty bad when you think about it.
It's almost mathematically impossible.
I see them coming out of the gate pretty quick, and I'm not too thrilled that the Lions have to play them in the first game of the season, because they're going to be still searching for their identity. And it would be nice for the Lions to have a good performance at home to kick off the season, to try and get some fans back. So, I think at this point I got to go with the Bombers in first. So the other week I posted my early prediction for the West, and it went like this. I've got Winnipeg in first, the Lions in second, Calgary third, Edmonton fourth, and Saskatchewan in last. Care to throw yours out?
I think I would swap BC and Calgary.
Okay.
And that would be my Western prediction.
Okay.
But honestly, I think it's interchangeable with almost any of the teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so hard to pick. I mean, I was on the Rouge Radio podcast a couple weeks ago, and they asked me for my prediction. And I said, man, you know, like every year you guys ask me this, and it's too early. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know what the rosters are going to look like, but here we go. And, you know, it's just so hard this year. Like there's four, like every team I think in this division could win the division if bounces go their way. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I've never seen this division so stacked.
I think Saskatchewan, now thinking about it, they probably have the best defense in the West.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree.
Calgary's taken some hits both in the linebacking core and the defensive line. So early in the year, I think teams might be able to run the ball on them. That was mm-hmm. not the case last year. You couldn't do anything against them.
Yeah.
So there are some holes on every team that I think yeah. teams will be able to take advantage of.
Yeah, for sure. We're not going to go through the whole East Division this week, but I think we'll throw out some predictions if you don't mind. I've got Hamilton in first, Toronto second, Ottawa third, and Montreal sitting in the basement again. And I do think we'll see a West crossover again, just because this West Division looks pretty scary.
Yeah, I'll put a West crossover there as well. I almost want to say Hamilton first. I think that one is the lock.
Yeah.
And maybe Montreal second.
I think so.
I think what I have is Hamilton first and Ottawa last.
Okay.
No matter what. Their offense just took a beating in the offseason, but they do have the coaching staff, I think, to keep them competitive. But what we saw from the Argos on Thursday, they put up 45 points against Montreal, and I know it's a preseason game, but they got six quarterbacks into the game, and it seemed like they all scored a touchdown. So maybe Toronto is going to be able to have a home playoff game after all.
I didn't read much about that game. Do you know what kind of rosters each team was dressing?
Well, Toronto, they tried to get all their quarterbacks into there. They had they have three Canadian quarterbacks, so Bridge ended up having, I think, 2 to 3 touchdowns. And the kid that they drafted from UBC, Michael O'Connor, had a touchdown. And Franklin and McLeod Bethel-Thompson apparently looked really good. But Montreal, they ended up sending their backups for that one. I know Pipkin did play a little bit, but it was mostly backups from Montreal and mostly starters from Toronto. And apparently they looked pretty good. They put up over 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, I'd like to see Jonathan Jennings kind of do well in Ottawa too. You know, that's a guy that showed a lot of promise, and he's kind of coming out of some hard times the last couple of years. So it'd be nice, maybe a change of scenery. He can rekindle that the skill that he showed in his first season. But I think Ottawa is going to be in tough now that you mention it, and you could probably swap Montreal and Ottawa. I don't know. I don't see Montreal going up to second. I think Hamilton, Toronto are going to probably be the teams in that division. I did come across a little nugget from Dave Taylor of TSN, and I think it's worth talking about, and I want to get your thoughts on it. He wrote an article that pointed out two provisions in the new CBA that deserve a closer look. The first issue is a clause that allows an injured Canadian to be replaced with an American. This is great from a depth point of view. I mean, I know coaches have complained in the past that the depth of Canadian players doesn't allow them to put the best players out there. But as Naylor points out, it may not be long until coaches start to stretch the rule a little bit, try and cheat the system. He points out an extreme example of Delvin Bro not starting a game, allowing the Ticats to start an import in another spot and starting a Canadian in Bro's spot, who conveniently just rolls his ankle early in the game and is replaced by Bro. The Tiger Cats would then have one extra import and one less Canadian on the field. We've seen coaches abuse the system before, so this is definitely going to be something to monitor, I think, as the season progresses and see if these guys try and cheat the rule a little bit.
I think we know the coach that would first cheat the rule, but he's now in the NFL.
He would definitely have a designated ankle roller on his roster, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee it. I would like to – I don't know if there's going to be clarity from the CFL on this, but – why would a team not do that? A couple minutes left in the game, whether you want to send an extra import out on defense or offense, trying to make a comeback here and end up hurting a Canadian. I don't, there's got to be a clause in there. And part of the thing that kind of bothers me is that we keep making the game, I know we crap on the officials a lot, but the CFL might be the most complicated game to officiate. How many other leagues have to – the officials have to keep track of this ratio nonstop.
Yeah.
And it has to be the same on both sides of the ball all game long. Now we add in an American ratio. Now we say that an American can sub in for a Canadian. I don't know how I feel about this one. I definitely feel like it'll be abused. And once it does happen, it'll be another one of those things where they change a rule mid-season like they did with the challenge rule a couple of years ago. And I'm not a fan of that either.
Yeah, I remember a few years ago, the Eskimos used to be famous for this with Mike Maurer. He was their designated fall guy in games, and they would go down just to get the extra timeout, some those kinds of things. So I mean, coaches will abuse this if they can find ways to do it, and I think it's definitely something to be concerned about as we move forward here. The other provision that Naylor points out is one that allows an American or global player graduating with a degree from a U Sports school to automatically qualify as a Canadian in the CFL as long as he's played at least three seasons at a Canadian university. Naylor points out that the implications could shift the league's player composition over the next 5 to 10 years, especially if U Sports coaches are able to use the provision to recruit more players from the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere to their programs. And while this could help improve the quality of play in U Sports by making it more attractive for foreign players to pursue a future in the sport through the Canadian development system, it could also potentially send a lot of non-Canadians to the CFL as Canadians, which means the actual number of Canadian-born players in the league would decrease without changing the ratio, requiring each team to dress 21 and start 7. So should we be concerned about this as Canadian football fans?
I want to know what you think about this. I really like that they say he has to have played three seasons at a Canadian university. If it was like one season, I think I would like it a lot less. Mm-hmm. But the fact that these guys have gotten their education in Canada for the most part, if they're there for 3 years, they're already getting ingrained into the community. They'll probably want to stay afterwards as well. I actually kind of like this wrinkle. Like, is that person any less Canadian than an Alex Singleton who has spent his entire life in the States, and then they find out 2 weeks before the draft that, oh, wait, my mom was born in Canada? True. Like, how is that guy a Canadian? I like this one. What I am concerned about, and as more info comes out about these CBA negotiations, is that it was basically the league trying to reduce the ratio of Canadian players. Yeah. And it wasn't the players. And that's what kind of worries me, because I thought that it would be the opposite. There are a lot of American players that want to get paid more. And yeah, it's wrong that a six offensive lineman or a guy in a backup offensive lineman gets paid more than a starting cornerback. That doesn't make much sense. But the fact that the league was trying to bring that number from 7 to 5, that is kind of concerning to me.
Yeah, I've got a couple thoughts on it. One, I don't think many U.S. players are going to take advantage of this. I mean, it's a different brand of football. And U.S. players want to go to U.S. colleges and play American football and try and get noticed by the NFL. So I see fringe players coming up here to Canada to play the game. I don't think you're going to get any cream of the crop U.S. talent coming to Canada to go to university to play Canadian football. Now that could be a lot different for, maybe teams in Europe and things like, or players in Europe and things like that. They may be more open to the idea, but I don't think a lot of high quality U.S. players are going to be, swarming into Canada to play at Canadian universities. So that's one thing. The second thing is I don't really like the automatic classification as a Canadian. I think maybe they should have to play a year or two to get that designation, even if they did go to a Canadian school. But that's just something I think I would like to see in there. But those are my two thoughts on it.
Some Americans, well, they start playing, football when, they're 3 years old or whatever. And a lot of kids in Canada, they're probably still playing hockey at that age. And a lot don't take up, football until later on. So I don't know if they're is a way that these youth sports schools could recruit guys. Maybe there's a high school quarterback or a receiver that he's not going to get a scholarship in the States, but he could come to Canada, and as a national in the CFL, he's probably got a decent chance to making the league and actually making a decent living. Because a guy that is at a small school in the States and doesn't have a scholarship, he's not even going to get a sniff in the NFL and make any money at all. So maybe there is a way the schools can recruit that way. But yeah, I can't see a guy from Texas saying, oh, I'm going to go to the, you know, University of Alberta and, you know, uproot my life and go live in Edmonton for the next little while.
Yeah. Hey, Travis, it's been a blast, man. Always good to chat with you. And thanks for filling in for Mojo tonight, so I'm not talking to myself.
Oh, I know how that is, so no problem, man.
Before we wrap this up, just remind everyone listening about your podcast, where they can find it, and tell them about this new blog that you have as well.
Yeah, you can go to twoandout.ca and check that out. There's podcast links on there. I write some different stories about, you know, different topics from across the league. We'll have our shows coming out twice a week, every Monday and Thursday, starting on, let's see here, when we go bi-weekly, or every twice a week. It is June 10th, but we'll have a show. We put one out on Thursday. We'll have one next Thursday. Then every Monday and Thursday after that, unless it's a long weekend, we'll have them all the way until November. We talk fantasy football. We talk pierogi eating contests. We talk about the entire CFL. We'll have a lot of fun this season.
Are you in training for this rematch with Zach Evans?
Well, I'm trying to. I got to kickstart my metabolism. That is the next step, because I think he wants to do like brisket.
Oh boy!
And that's going to be rougher than pierogies. I know that.
Got to get that digestive system moving if you're going to be eating a ton of brisket.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, better you than me, my man.
Yeah.
That's it for episode 132. Our thanks again to Travis Carra of the 2&Out CFL podcast for helping me steer the ship tonight. Make sure to check out all the great shows in the Canadian Football Podcast Network, because, folks, they keep getting better and better, and we're proud to be a part of it. Check out cfpodnetwork.ca and at cfpodnetwork on Twitter to stay up to date. Thanks again to our sponsors, Metal Rocks Custom Artisan Jewelry and seatgiant.ca. Please tell your friends to check us out, and make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Check us out online at bclionsden.ca, on Facebook at facebook.com/bclionsden.ca, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWDCAST. And of course, follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at mojocamp. Make sure to follow us this week, because we'll have a pair of tickets to give away to the exhibition game against the Bombers. To give away to a lucky follower. On behalf of Mojo Camp, Travis Carra, and myself, take care of yourselves, and as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.